Hi! This episode's guest on Hometown to Hollywood is director Colton Tran. Colton is still in his 20s, but he's already amassed an impressive body of work. He's also a film editor, as well as a visual artist, and makes amazing art out of shattered vinyl records for his company, Transylvinyl. Colton, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Bonnie. Thank you. Aw, you're so cute.
So we met originally on the set of Disney's Cloud Nine in Utah, and you were one of the actors on that project, and it took me a while to figure out that that wasn't really your passion, that you were actually interested in directing.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of the actors on set didn't know that, and I mean, throughout the process of filming, they realized that, because we all kind of shared our creative, like, passions, you know, with each other, but, yeah, it's interesting how that whole Cloud Nine process came about, because it literally, like, I booked that 2 months after moving to LA, which is like, I mean, you know, that doesn't typically happen. And so what happened is I moved here to LA. 2 months in, I was shooting a new project in Utah, flew back there. It was titled Gloom. So we were in production for that. My agents in Utah called and said, hey, like, there's a Disney movie come through town. Can you audition? And I was like, I'm shooting, but I'll come after. So I auditioned for it. Ended up getting a call back the day after, but I was still shooting Gloom, so it was, like, when I had the time. And then flew back to L.A., and I didn't hear for, like, a week. And then they called and said, hey, it's between you and one other person. Like, can you come back for an audition? I was like, I'm back in L.A., I can't. And so they sent me straight to the Disney Channel office, auditioned in front of, like, Judy, and then my agent called, like, hours later and was like, hey, they need your wardrobe sizes. I was like, great.
He's like, but I'm a director.
I know, but it's so funny, but I did have an acting agent in Utah because... I started, like, directing and acting in my own stuff, like, when I was, like, 12, 13. And then when I became older and, like, realized, like, the technical stuff of, you know, how the whole process works in this, you know, in the industry, I was like, I really want to do more acting just to help myself as a director. Because I felt like a great technical director, but I wanted to be an actor's director as well. And so I thought the best way to do it would to put me in front of camera and to, like, really study acting. And so it was literally just for my craft as a director, but it ended up becoming something more, which, I mean, Cloud Nine was a huge blessing for me because I got introduced to a lot of amazing people that I still work with today.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. A lot of really lifelong friendships came out of that particular project. I mean, you always hope that that'll happen, but it doesn't always happen.
No, a lot of the time it doesn't happen. And, like, the fact that it's, like, majority of the cast are, like, some of my closest friends is crazy.
Yeah. And that was almost 4 years ago.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, so, you know, when did you know you wanted to be a director? A lot of kids, you know, even when they're little, they know they want to be actors or they think they want to be actors. But directing, that's not something that usually shows up in a young person's vision board.
Yeah, right? No, it's funny because both of my brothers grew up, like, heavy into sports. And, like, I mean, I tried it, like, dabbled in it when I was younger. But we moved around in Utah to this, from Salt Lake City to its, you know, town named Layton. And a filmmaker moved in next door to us. His name is Scott Freeburn, and his daughter was my same age. We were about 12 years old, actually 11 at the time. But he was directing a lot of the Mormon movies and stuff, but he asked his daughter and I to be an extra. He's like, do you guys want to come in and be like, we're like, yeah, well, you know. We had no interest in the industry at that point, like, or because I wasn't familiar with it. So we did that, and we, like, just became so fascinated with the set life of being, like, on set. We're like, can we make our own movie? You know, like, that typical thing. And he provided us with camera, you know, sound editing systems. And he's like, here's iMovie, taught us how to use it, just started making our own little productions. And then eventually that grew into making our own movie posters. And, like, obviously, so he taught us Photoshop at that age. And by the time we were about 13, almost 14, he made us learn Final Cut Pro. So we were, like, learning Final Cut at this age.
That's crazy.
It was so crazy. We were really fortunate to have that happen, but we just were as normal. Like, I mean, other kids were, like, you know, going to school, like, playing sports after, like, hanging out, going to the mall, whatever. Me and my friend Allison would be like, let's make a movie. Like, let's write a script. And so every week we'd just be making movies after movie. Like, we have about 50 we made growing up as kids, which is fun to look back on. It's like a life scrapbook. You know what I mean?
That's so cool. I mean, it's kind of like the modern day version of I've got a barn. Let's put on a play, you know?
Right? That's exactly it. And so he provided us with everything we needed. And it was really cool to grow up and progress that way and to just have that passion grow at such a young age. Because by the time we were in high school, I got into student body office and got in as a media tech. And so I started doing all the movie stuff for high school, which eventually got me a scholarship to college for film and leadership. And so I was there for about 2 years on that leadership program and then was sent to the East Coast because they sent their two top film students. But it was funny because they had to have two to compete. My other guy didn't show up. So it was just me. And they were like, well, okay, you have two options. You can either go on your own, I mean, or with this guy, and they pointed some random guy, or they said, or you can just stay back because you have to have someone on your team. And they point to this guy who was like some chaperone who's like 50 and he's like has a cane. And I was like, but okay, great. And he has no clue what the film industry is about. But I was like, I want to go compete. So I went. And so this guy's on my team, but I thought it was interesting because I was like, I'll be the one who's like familiar with movies. I'll do my thing, and he'll be the person I can bounce things off of who's not familiar and who's an outside look, you know what I mean? So that was, it actually really did help. But, so went out there, competed, ended up taking first in the nation, which was nuts to me.
Get out of here.
Yeah, it was a competition where they give you a topic, you have to shoot it in 2 hours, edit in 2 hours, and deliver. Like,
so this is some kind of national college contest
It was called Skills USA. It's like a national competition. They have culinary, they have film, they have mechanics, they have whatever. It's this huge thing that they bring people from all around, you know, the country for. And so I took first in the film division for college and ended up getting a scholarship to the Art Institute from there. And so went there for about a year and a half, 2 years, when at that point, like, I mean, they wanted me to start in the beginner classes, which I was like, I don't want to do this. So they pushed me past all the beginner things. And then it got to the point where, like, I was relearning things I already knew. And so they were like, what if we put you in a class where you can just, it's you one-on-one with the teacher. We know you're producing, because I was doing Unpleasantville that time. I had another film, like, traveling festivals. And so they were like, what if we just have you come to class? And, I mean, just you and a teacher, and you can ask them any questions you want, anything about your editing, like, feedback, like, whatever. It's just almost like a, hey, like, a progression class, like, if you want to.
Like a mentorship.
Exactly.
Officially.
It was really cool. So did that for a little bit, but it's still, I was still busy doing other things outside of school. Which ultimately I thought about it and like, it's what people are going to school to do. So I was like, I didn't feel as bad not going. And, anyways, during that time I had two projects that got recognized in LA. Like a manager had seen my stuff somehow because of festivals, I guess. And he was like, hey, I want to meet with you. And I was kind of traveling back and forth anyways, cause I had some friends that lived out here that I would visit often. And, so met with him and I mean, he was really cool and he was really passionate about my work, but I had a feeling like, I'm like, if I make that jump to move to LA, I feel like it's not going to work like with this guy. But anyways, it was that thing that pushed me. I was like, my mom's like, you have to go. My dad was like, we all support you. Like you should go. So me and my producing partner moved out to LA. Of course, as soon as I got out there, the situation with that first manager was like not the best situation. So I was just like, great, but at least I'm out here now.
Right.
And then a week later, literally, I had my agent that was my acting rep in Utah reach out to a manager here for directing. He signed me the day he met me and then also was like, hey, I need you to meet my other agent because I'm your manager. I want you to meet this agent. You need to be repped by him. And so I ended up signing with Paradigm, which ultimately I went with him to CAA. So now I'm with CAA from that. Yeah.
That's amazing. You know, I don't think a lot of people really think about this, but just like actors need agents and managers, directors need agents and managers,
oh,
don't they?
Big time. I mean, it's... Like some people are good at just getting work on their own, but if you can have people who really support your, get your vision, really support your work and your style or whatever, if it's specific, then yeah, they can help you find work that you would never be able to find on your own. Especially, I mean, people that are at CAA or Paradigm, they're in with the people who are doing the bigger things and the things that are going to push you as a creative or filmmaker to the next level.
Yep.
And that's something that I respected so much with my reps at the beginning is just that they really, really understood my style because it's, you know, it's very much inspired by German Expressionism, which is, you know, Tim Burton's inspiration and like Guillermo del Toro's inspiration. So it's just like very dark, stylized, you know, plays off shadows, you know, contrast, just forced perspective, just a lot of that really interesting, quirky style. And so they got it. They just 100% understood what I was trying to do, supported it. And then they shopped my stuff all over, which got a lot of recognition. But I needed to get scripts under their, you know, like full on scripts for each one of my shorts that I'd done. So that was a progress after that. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Do you have a particular inspiration? I mean, you just mentioned Guillermo. I can never say his name.
Me too.
Please. Guillermo.
Guillermo del Toro. Yeah. I actually just went to his exhibit in LACMA.
Oh.
It was a phenomenal. But yeah, Tim Burton and Guillermo del Toro are like my current style, like stylistic inspirations. Like, I love the style and the feel, especially Guillermo. Like, I like how dark his stuff goes. That's what I want to do with mine. But my first inspiration as a kid, when I was like 12 starting to do film, was, you know, Spielberg, just because, I mean, I grew up loving sharks and dinosaurs, and I was like, I mean, his movies just embodied everything I loved. But also I looked up to him as a filmmaker and his journey, because he started, you know, he did Duel when he was like 22 or something like that, and then Jaws happened when he was 25 or something ridiculous. And so I really, as a kid, I pushed myself to try to follow in these footsteps of like, hey, at least like after college, I want to try to get to this place. At 22, I want to have something similar. I want to have this. Obviously, not as extreme, but just to really have some guidelines to push myself and to like reach, you know, you want these goals to reach. So that was my first inspiration with Spielberg. And then the other two filmmakers came, you know, after, during, once I like locked down like what my passion really was stylistically, because I'd always had I was always drawn to the dark. I don't know why. So yeah, that's that.
You know, I always take young artists more seriously when they seem deeply knowledgeable and passionate about the whole industry. Mm-hmm. Like when they're hungry to learn about what, you know, how things really work. It's not just like, oh, I want to be famous or I want to be performing. It's like, you know, they know about the careers like you did of the people that they admire, you know, and how things worked and what the timelines were. So they have a really strong sense of what they're getting themselves into.
Exactly. I mean, one thing I learned about Tim Burton as well is that, you know, he worked for Disney for a while and he had a passion project that no one believed in at first, which was Frankenweenie, you know, and he wanted to do that stop motion, which, you know, he ended up doing, but they were like, nah, like we have this budget, which would have only lent for live action, which he did. And it showed them what his style was and what his passion was. And obviously they believed in more and more, and, you know, Pee-wee's Big Adventure came soon after that. And it's just interesting to see all of their journeys. And I've become friends with like a lot of amazing producers out here and directors. And one of my friends, Michael, he directed Trick or Treat and that new Krampus movie that came out. And he was telling me the process of Trick or Treat. Like, he's like, I created a comic for it. He's like, 10 years after the movie was made. And that's just such, you think about it, you're like, wow, it takes that long from inception for something to actually come to fruition. And you're like, but I mean, you know, it gives you inspiration and hope and everything like that, because it's not going to happen overnight. Some things do, but it's not often. So you just continue to build yourself and grow. And I've had so much support. I've been so blessed for that, because I mean, that's one big thing that I think keeps people, you know, going and believing in themselves is like that support.
It's huge. It's huge to have your family behind you. I've met both of your parents and they are so behind you.
So behind me. Yeah. It's
so cool.
It's really, I've been so lucky with them, because they never have once questioned it. Like, when I was doing films as a kid, my mom, I'm like, Mom, we need an actor. And she'd be like, okay, you're right, just let me finish the dishes. And she comes, like, trotting in and, like, says this line. She's like, what do I have to say? It was, you know what I mean? It's so funny. And then, and my dad's always just, like, been, like, you know, they've always just been, like, just huge cheerleaders. And, like, my dad's, at the beginning, would be so supportive over, like, financially with, you know, I'd be like, hey, Dad, like, I want this, like, camera. Like, or, you know, for Christmas, he'd be like, so he buys me a camera. Or, like, if I was like, I need to learn how to edit, and so he'd buy an editing system or whatever he needed to progress the career, which at that age, like, I mean, it's not like parents are gonna be like, oh, they're gonna grow up to want to do this for real, but he really just believed in it and did it, you know, like really supported me, so that was cool.
That's so beautiful. So what was your school experience like? You had this friend you met when you were 11, 12, you're starting mm-hmm. to do all these, you know, passion projects outside of school, but what about school? You were able to integrate that pretty well, it sounds like, or
yeah.
Did you feel like, you know, you fit in and it was easy and great, or?
Yeah, I did, because, well, I mean, I had a very small clique. Like, we were very, like, specific. It was, like, a group of 7 of us from, like, elementary to junior high. And then at the end of junior high, we all, like, dispersed, which was strange because we all just, like, went into different, like, cliques. Like, I ended up, like, going more, like, preppy, whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it. And, like, my ex-girlfriend went over to, like, she was, like, this punk, like, Avril Lavigne sort of feeling, like, some, you know what I mean? It was so weird how we all kind of just transitioned. We were still very close, but just went different ways. Me and Allison kept doing films throughout junior high and high school. And it wasn't difficult for us because people like respected it. Like, people actually kind of wanted to be like in our films, you know, they thought it was fun. But Allison, she continued to keep doing film, but like almost like documentary stuff. And so we kind of drifted apart, like as working together. But yeah, because I kind of wanted to take it more seriously into a bigger scale of things. And she was just almost content with, you know, where she was at. And I just was like, I need this to be like, this is like what I want to do for the rest of my life. So, you know, it was just something I thank their family so much for introducing me to that world, because, you know, otherwise it's like at that age, no one really figures out what they want
to
do.
How could you if you've never been exposed to it? I mean, it's like, if you don't know about something that it's a possible thing, really, it's like,
yeah,
it's not there for you to think about and pursue. It's so interesting how big a role exposure plays in the choices that we make in our lives.
100%. I mean, and then going back to the school thing one more time, it's just, it also, the film being exposed that young, I think, really kept me on, like, a straight and narrow path. I mean, I grew up in Utah, which is very conservative in the first place, but sometimes it's, like, black and white there. You either, like, or stay on the straight and narrow, or you're, like, rawr, like, crazy. But that really kept me on a path that, like, I knew what I wanted to do, and so it was, like, that was my priority. It wasn't, like, oh, I'm gonna go drink and party with my friends. It was, like, I want to, like, make this movie, and I still love editing. I edit all my own work. And it just, like, it's one of those things that as soon as I'm done filming, I'm like, oh, I need to edit. I want to edit. And it's just exciting. It's like Christmas morning. You're like, I want to look at the footage. It's just, I don't know. There's something about it that I would rather do that any day over, you know, like, I don't know. I think I spent a lot of my time wisely. And then I would have not, I guess, if I didn't do film growing up, it would have been spent doing other things probably, you know, I don't know. But
I'm actually super happy that you brought that up, because I've had this theory forever that the kids who have some kind of passion, mm-hmm. that they are just, like, they want to do it more than anything else, and they're completely clear that they do not want to be pulled off track, mm-hmm. like, or jeopardize it for 100%. Some reason or another. They get through that really rocky opportunity time, you know, that place where a lot of kids fall off the rails. They get through in one piece because they are like, no, I'm not going to, you know, mess up my possibility of getting somewhere following my dream.
It's so true. And, like, but it's not something that's, like, really even at the front of your mind at that time. No. It's almost just like, oh, I'm not going to do this. You just bypass it. But it's such a struggle for other people going through that at that time, because it's such a big, like, judgmental point in your life. You're like, if I don't do this, then I'm not looked at as cool. If I don't do this, then I'm not going to go here. Like, it's such a strange time. But when you have something that you're focusing on, a passion, it's not like you're even thinking about those other things, because this is your priority. You're like, well, doesn't matter what's going on over there. I'm doing this, and that's what's important to
me. It's completely straightforward, and I don't even think it matters what your passion is, as long as you've got something, mm-hmm. something that drives you, and it's got a very protective quality, and I just love that.
Yeah, I love that too, and I think more people need to find at least something, like you said, if it's not anything specific, just something, because majority, I think literally, like, 8 out of, like, 10, like, don't know what they want to do. Like, I would ask people in high school or even college, and they're like, yeah, I'm just getting my associates. I actually don't know what I want to do, but and I'm just like, I'd be scared to not know that. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a certain security as well, and having, like, being on the straight and narrow and knowing, and, like, kind of just having a good structure, I think it's just by knowing that in the first place, because then you can follow that and not be, like, lost. I think being lost can, like, really, like, deter people just in life in general, but, yeah.
Well, being lost is risky.
It is.
You know, it's just risky. I'm thinking again, we talked a little bit about this already, about the intersection of school / formal training with mm-hmm. learning by doing. And I talked to a lot of actors, and they're all over the board on that one. I mean, half of them are like, oh man, training, school, coaching, that's, I wouldn't be anywhere without it. And the others are like, yeah, no, I just learned by doing.
Exactly.
You know? And I mean, it's like, it's fascinating to see how the range is with that. And there's obviously no right way to mm-hmm. do it. And it sounds like you've got kind of a hybrid in terms of your background. Mostly learning by doing with a bit of formal.
Yes. Are you talking about acting specifically?
Actually, I'm thinking about directing again.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, for directing, it was, I mean, he taught us the essential stuff, which, I mean, obviously we would have never learned if he didn't, like, with the editing and whatever, but we just really grew creatively on our own, because we would just, as he was working and doing whatever, we would take a camera and just go be crazy and do things that we thought were fun, and, like, start to learn what visually looks best, and watch films that inspired us, and, like, copy certain ways that they did things. And it was, so a lot of it was, like, just hands-on by doing, especially, you know, with, like, growing up. But then, I mean, even when I was in high school, there was only one media tech class, and it was stuff only focusing usually on Photoshop, and they didn't really talk about technical stuff like camera-wise or, you know, dollies. You didn't talk about equipment or nothing. So it was very typical, like, very standard stuff that didn't really help us grow, so we were doing that on our own. But it got more formal when I went to the Art Institute, because that was, like, a legitimate school. I mean, UVU, I mean, I was learning some stuff there as well, but, yeah, I don't know. I think it's more by doing, because during college, I was still directing projects on my own, like, bigger projects with big crews, and so that's, like, the easiest way to learn is just do it. Like, you know what I mean? If you have someone that can believe in you, and, like, you have the capability to do it, and you'll learn so much more than you ever could have by sitting in a classroom.
So, you were talking about spending some time as an actor so that you could become more of an actor's director. Do you have any auditioning advice for actors as a director?
I do. It's so funny because as an actor going into an audition, obviously at first it was, like, horrifying to me, and, like, it's just such a different experience than being behind the camera. Because when I'm auditioning people, I can really, like, feel compassion and sympathy for these people because I know how they feel. They're either like really like confident or they're really not, or like I can just tell how horrified they are. And I'm like, and I really can ease them into a place because I understand how it is on both sides now. But still, for some reason, just as an actor going in, even though I've experienced the other side, it's so hard not to just place yourself in like a completely like comfortable, like, meh, whatever, you know? But I have kind of got myself now to this mental place where I'm like, the people that I'm auditioning for, they are looking for the best. They are, you know, it's, they're not looking for someone who's horrified. They're not looking for like someone who's like we shouldn't be as nervous as we are as actors. You know what I mean? Like it's such a funny thing to experience the other side, which a lot of actors haven't actually. They've never been on the auditioning side as a, you know, as like a filmmaker or a director, producer. So I think a lot of people should experience that, especially actors. They somehow, I think they should find, you know, someone to, even for like a day, like if they're a part of a film and they've already been cast, it's like, hey, can I sit on the auditions just to kind of see how this is? And I just think that would be a lot of like really helpful for people.
I am so happy you brought that up, because even like in high school, I spent a lot of time like student directing, and when you're student directing, even you're auditioning, and
exactly.
it demystified so much of that for me. It just chilled me out about the whole like process, you know, what it meant, yeah. what it didn't mean, and you know,
exactly. Well, you don't take it so seriously because you're like, they're coming into a room where we're just sitting right here, the exact same position. You just swap it. You're like, they are looking for someone just like we are. It's nothing crazy. It's like, if we mess up, it's not the end of the world. It's, mm-hmm. you know, because we get in our heads about everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, yeah, it's really good to be that mental space to know both sides for sure.
I love that. That is great advice. So now you've also directed all of the music videos for The Girl in the Dreamcatcher,
yes.
Which is Dove Cameron and Ryan McCartan's band. You guys are all best friends.
Yes. Oh, I love them.
It's so cool. Well, they love you. But most of your work has been done in short film, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you feel like are the major differences between, say, directing a music video and a short film? Like, that's...
Yes, it's quite a difference. I mean, okay, so I mean, most of my recent stuff has been short film, but I had done a feature actually once in Utah.
Oh my gosh.
Which was such an experience, because that was when I was 17, and it was like low, low budget. It was crazy. But the difference of narrative and then doing a music video is so different because, I mean, for me, I love trying to tell a narrative story, which Dove and Ryan have been more than willing to, like, incorporate stories, and we're all of us are so collaborative, you know what I mean? Like, we'll come up with a certain concept, and then we'll all, like, elaborate on it, and, like, write this and this, and yeah, and, like, they're more than willing to have a flowing story throughout the whole thing. But since it's a music video, there's always those solo moments where they're singing towards camera or they're singing in general. That's so different than a narrative, you know, movie or a storytelling sort of structure. So with their music videos, it's been interesting, and as a director, like, going into music videos, trying to combine that story, but also trying to tell a beautiful, like, visual of showcasing this talent. Obviously, you're wanting to show the band, and, like, show their potential, and then and also show, like, the best side of them, you know? Like, and also you want to show some sort of, like, passion within the way that they sing, and it also has to go along with the story. It's different. It's very different than what I had dealt with before, but they were the best people to kind of be introduced with music video wise. I had done one music video before them, that was very stylistic as well, but they've been just like such a great growing experience for me. Like, all of us grew together with these music videos, and we see them progress every single time,
oh.
which is cool because that's all you want as a filmmaker and as a talent, and like just to see things get better every time. You know what I mean?
Well, that last thing you did with the split screen was crazy.
It was fun. It was fun. It was like definitely a challenge. All of us were like, crap, is this going to work out? We're like, we're going to make it work. And it was really fun to do. Like, it was a challenge for us, pushed us to a different limit, which is what you want to do as well. And, you know, and introducing them to a lot of the crew that I've worked with, which is great because I hope that they can like find friendships or business, you know, partnerships with them in the future, because I found a really good, like, core team. It's hard to find. When I was in Utah, I had that team, and then I moved here, and I was like, crap, like, I can't keep flying these people out every single time. So I was like, I have to build this somehow. And it all started, actually, you know, pretty quickly out here. Like, when I did a web series for my friend Jeanette, like, found a really good crew, and then obviously they introduced us to other people, and just on, so on and so forth.
And now you've got a list of people that you know to call when you need to put together a new project.
Exactly, yeah. And you know, the one funny thing about the music videos with Dove and Ryan is that, like, obviously did Cloud9 with her, and during the process I found out that she loved Tim Burton, which I love Tim Burton, and we fell in love with each other, you know, for that sort of like mutual bond, exactly. And but she saw my directing work, she didn't know that I did, and she was like, oh my gosh, she's like, this is amazing, she's like, I have to work with you somehow. And I was like, I want to work with you too. And she's like, well, when I do my own music, I want you to direct it. 3 years later, ended up directing her stuff, which, I mean, is that doesn't usually happen. You know what I mean? Usually people, like, say it, they words, never action. So the time came. She was like, let's talk about concepts, pitch me concepts, did it. She loved it. They were not hands-on at that point. Like, they were, like, just like, yep, yeah, we like the idea. Let's shoot these dates. Cool, we'll show up on set. We'll shoot a video. So they just put 100% trust and belief in what I could do. And because I thought about that, and I was like, wow, they did not even, like, call to make sure, like, what crew we had, what cat, like, anything. And they just showed up, like, believing that it was all going to work out. And, like, they were like, wow, like, this is a full-on production. Like, I don't know what they were expecting, but they just believed it, like, trusted it. And that was really cool and, like, spoke volumes to me with our friendship and business relationship now.
Yeah.
And it's so cool. But now they're a lot more hands-on and, like, obviously because they believe what's happening and, they've built relationships with all the cast and crew and everything we work with too, so it's fun.
Well, the creative control has got to be one of the most joyful things as a director, and I think it's something that they've both really grown to love as well.
100%. I mean, that's why I write a lot of my own stuff, just because, I mean, first of all, the concepts and style is very specific, so it's harder to bring on a writer who understands the vision, so I just do it myself, but also if you're doing it yourself, you maintain that sort of creative control and ownership, because that's what they've done as well, which is phenomenal. I mean, one thing that's blown my mind is that Disney doesn't own any of their music, but they've released all of our music videos on Disney Channel, and it's so cool to see they believe in them that much.
It's a very special, unusual situation.
Very, very special, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, again, you know, they're self-produced, and it sort of goes along the way of, you know, the way your career has been that way. It's like, you know, I'm going to follow my own vision here, and I'm going to bootstrap and figure it out.
Exactly. Well, I mean, that's when a lot of the most creative parts come out in someone's mind and imagination. It's like when you are put in those restraints of just like, okay, I don't have a big studio, I don't have a big, like, ton of money, but I do have my own creative control, and so I can kind of just go out of the box and do whatever I want. And I think that, like, see, it goes like, it's like a scale a little bit. You're like, what one do I want to really, like, focus on? Because a lot of people want that money from a studio, but at the same time, you lose that control. So I think having that control and dealing with a lower budget and just kind of, like, putting yourself under that sort of pressure makes you more creative, which I love.
I've always thought that. I think the most creative results are often when there's serious constraint of some kind or another. And you can get some really amazing results that you wouldn't get if you weren't pushed to reach a
exactly,
little bit.
Exactly.
You know, if the budget was all there.
I know, right?
Some days it sounds like a good idea, but
and the other times, like, what was I thinking? This is ridiculous.
So what has surprised you about your journey as a director so far? What have been some surprises?
Surprises? I think it's, well, I think for me, I mean, I didn't know 100% what I wanted going into this industry as a director at first. I just knew that I wanted to create and I wanted to tell stories. But ultimately, like, when my first film went to festivals, I saw how it affected other people. Like, it was called $1.11, and it was about this little girl who, you know, her little brother, this is totally out of the genre of what I do now, but it was like a drama of, like, where her brother gets, you know, this tumor in his head, and so she thinks she can buy a miracle, like, legitimately thinks she can buy one, and it's that whole sort of story. But when we went to New York, the International Film Festival, after I had this family come up to me, they were actually a Muslim family too, and they were like, I just want to let you know this story really, really was special to us. It really, we related to it, and it was, and they were like, the woman was crying. It was just really cool to see how a story can touch people that way, and something that, like, we had created and put this time into can really touch people. And so that's something that has surprised me, I guess, is to just, that was another thing that pushed me to a different level as a filmmaker, to be like, wow, like, what I'm doing isn't just telling a story, it's something that really can affect people's lives and touch people in a way that can change their lives, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though my style now is very kind of fantasy and it's out of this world, people can still find a way to relate to characters or, you know, to the story in some way. But I thought that was something that surprised me, because I didn't really think that my work was doing that, but I guess it did.
I think it's good for everybody to remember that, you know? I mean, we get into doing these things because we love them and it gives us joy, like personal fulfillment, but we're not doing this in a vacuum. We're doing this in the context of a greater world, you know, where other people are touched and affected by what we do one way or another, you know, whether it's, you know, negative or positive or inspiring or, you know, brings you down. We touch others with our actions, and as artists, we can really make a big difference.
100%. But you also, like you just said, sometimes you forget that because it's your passion, it's your career. It's like what you're, you just like, oh, it's almost like robotic at some point. You're like, this is what I do, this is what I do. But you forget the, you know, the outcome of what you do, how it affects people.
Mm-hmm. The flip side of
that. Yeah, it's really interesting.
So this is one of those careers where it's not like you just clock in the morning and you put in your 20 or 30 or 40 years and you retire and you kind of know how it's going to go. I don't know if there's any careers like that anymore.
Right, yeah.
but the truth is, this is one of those careers where you know it's not like that.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's not easy, you know? No. I mean, you step into this path knowing that it's going to be full of challenges and curveballs and, you know, that some days are not going to be, you know, easy days. How do you stay positive and how do you stay focused on your dream when the roadblocks come up and when the challenges show up?
I love this industry so much, but like you just said, it's like such a different animal. Like maybe I wished I was an editor for Disney and just came in at 9 to 5. You know what I mean? Like,
be more like 9 to 9.
I know, right?
Editors like, work long hours. That's not about Disney. That's about editing.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I see that, but then I'm like, then I would have no time for my passion projects, you know? And or just for my own stuff. And like, that's what I've been so fortunate to have that, you know, support to be able to do that. But when roadblocks come up all the time because you are on your own work schedule and you're creating your own, you know, stories and like, it's just all in your head and you're like, how do I portray this? Do I write it out? Do I draw it? Like, do I create like clay figures? Like, what do I do? And then especially as an actor and as a director, like I've been submitted to direct several things that are bigger studio things. And people respond well to my work. But if you're not, if you don't have a certain big thing behind your belt, under your belt, they're like, oh, well, we're going to go with this guy who did that. And I'm like, oh, well, that they've never even done anything that sort of style, but they choose them anyways. And so you're like, I need to prove myself. But the way that I stay positive is that I just really try to not let myself get discouraged. Because if you think about it, it's just a waste of time. For me, something I learned to live by early on was the fact that I think everything happens for a reason. Like, I've literally just lived by that saying, because there's certain extreme cases, but if you live by that and like something bad happens or like you don't book this or you like, you know, you don't, you know, like do something right in your audition or whatever, like just think about it. Like, it all happened the way it was supposed to. You were not supposed to book that role because guess what? You probably are going to get something this next week, you know, that would have interfered with that. Or this film wasn't right at that time. Great. Just accept it, move on, keep working. Because sometimes people get discouraged. It puts them in a rut where they kind of go off the radar for a couple months or like a week or whatever, but still that's a week that you could have been doing something to really progress yourself and to inspire other people. Like I was mentioning to you, I've done this, you know, since I was a kid now, and I continue just to work and try to make myself the best I can be. But I've had people approach me that have said they feel inspired by my work and that my constant hustle is like something that inspires them to work harder, which is cool to me because I forget. But that's another goal, you know, besides just like creating stuff and telling a story and touching people is like to inspire people. And that's one thing how I can stay positive too, is just to like be like, okay, I can't sit here and like dwell on this because people are going to see that as well. People just are very susceptible to energy and you just need to like be an inspiration to people, you know, and a positive like role model. So it's like, continue to do it because you're going to affect people more than you think.
I agree. Energy is contagious. And
goodness.
You have to be mindful of that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about being responsible in a lot of ways. Well, so how old were you when you landed in Hollywood?
I was 22.
22. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you had a bunch of experience under your belt at this point. Mm-hmm. 22 is pretty young still.
Yeah. To move here because a lot of people moved here earlier than that, but a lot of my friends are usually older than that or people that have been older than that here are still doing certain things that I did when I was in school. So it's interesting to see the fact that I did start earlier, how much of a head start that did give me, mm-hmm. because that wouldn't have happened otherwise. And so mm-hmm. I'm still so grateful for that, but sorry.
Well, so how was it? I mean, you're coming from Utah. And one thing I've noticed in the 6 years since we've lived here is like almost everybody I'm ever in a room with is from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Like we are all transplants.
I know.
It's crazy. So you come here from Utah and it's like, you know, how did you land? Did you like, you know, have somebody to like room with? I mean, was it easy? Was it smooth? Was it challenging? What was that like?
It was actually, okay, so it was so smooth that it almost like worried me. You know what I mean? I came out with like a manager, but I also moved here with my producing partner, Laura Young, who's phenomenal. Her dad grew up in the industry, still produces, like he did that whole Swan Princess franchise. So he was like very animated, like his animation background. But we moved here together, moved into a place in Toluca Lake because I had friends I had constantly visited. He was a writer that I had worked with. So we were familiar with our surroundings. I also had worked with Jeanette when she flew to Utah, so I was always, like, hanging out with her. I had, like, a small core group of friends that I really respected and kept me, like, wanting to be better, you know what I mean? And so that was a smooth transition friend-wise and just, like, coming out somewhere that I was like, oh, I have friends. And so it wasn't, because I know a lot of people, I feel so bad. Like, they come here because they just have that passion, but they don't know anyone. They don't know any context to work. Like, it can be so, so difficult. So I was very, like, very, very lucky to have that and fortunate. But yeah, like I said, about 2 months after, I mean, I had reps, but then all of a sudden I was booked that Disney Channel movie. And I was like, what in the world? And some of my acting friends had been out here for, like, years, like, trying to act. And I was like, oh, well, like, they were kind of like, something. You know what I'm saying? Like, they were like, how did you do that? I was like, I don't know. It's just kind of one of those things. But I feel like, you know, when you're not, again, like, kind of just staying positive and just kind of doing your thing and going with the flow, that's when things happen the way they're supposed to. If you're trying to force, you know, a square into a circle, it's not going to work. And so it's just one of those things that it just kind of happened organically, which I was so blessed for. And I had it's just about surrounding yourself with people you can trust. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would suggest to anyone that's moving here at first, is to either, like, have moments, you know, have your family come out here for a little bit with you, or someone that you know you trust, just kind of, like, help that ease into this town. Or, you know, like, don't be going out to the clubs and trying to find a friend out there, because clearly that's probably, I mean, maybe you can find someone you can trust, but I think that's people's initial reaction. It's like, let's go out, like, somewhere where there's a ton of people and, like, party and blah, 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 whatever, and, like, we'll find friends. Like, go somewhere that's comfortable to you, that's, like, out of the norm to you, and find someone that you can really, like, bond with and so relate with, and someone that you could maybe start to create with, which you'll gain trust with, and, you know,
and build a community.
Exactly. Like, a strong community of trust, and, you know, something that you could actually grow with. Because I think that's a big mistake with people, is, like, I know that a lot of people move out here, they think what they need to do is, like, or they run into the wrong friend group, and then all of a sudden they're out all the time, they're like, crap, I'm broke now, and all I've done is just party this entire year I was here, and now I have to go home. And I mean, it's sad, but it's common.
I see that a lot.
It's very, very common.
Yeah. No, you've got an amazing community here, and you create with people that you love and trust, and it's like, man, it doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for to have that trust and have the people's, like, trust in your work, and you can trust in their work, and, like, I don't know, it's just such an amazing, like, community that we've built, and I'm so glad that we're a part of each other's community as well.
Me too.
I love you so much.
I love you so much. This is so fun. It's like one more thing we get to do together.
I know. It's so cool.
So what have been any particular challenges you faced as a director or as an artist?
Challenges. I think that, oh my goodness. Well, I mean, I feel like you're always facing challenges regardless. Like, even if you feel like I have my whole shot list here, I have very specific storyboards to show my DP and my gaffer, and, like, they know how it needs to be lit, and I have this, like, you know, wardrobe inspiration. No matter how prepped you are, you're going to run into some sort of situation on set, or, you know, or beforehand, or in post, or whatever, but you just kind of have to deal with it as it comes.
It's
like,
guaranteed.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't know, like, I'm trying to think of any specific struggle. I mean, they're always there, so there's nothing that, like, really, really stands out that was crazy. But I'm one of those people who just observes everything, and I'm very analytical. So even during Cloud Nine, I was really taking note of Paul and how he was directing and how they were putting out these fires. And, like, even though it was a huge scale, it was Disney compared to, like, what I do, I was comparing to, like, this is very similar to what I do, but it's just on a larger scale. Oh, they ran into that situation. What did they do? You know, and you just handle it the best you possibly can. And that's why you have a team around you who's just going to kind of, like, put that out with ease and move forward.
See, that's why I think you're so incredibly accomplished at this young age, at this point, because you pay attention to everything. You're not just like, okay, I'm not, I don't have any lines right now. I'm sitting in my chair. I'm on my phone on Twitter. No, you're watching, mm-hmm. and you're taking notes, and you're learning about 40 things a minute, and you're filing that stuff away, and you're keeping it and using it. And that's huge. And I see that again, the people who really get somewhere, they're taking advantage of all the opportunities they've got, and they're keeping their eyes open to, I think, advantages that a lot of people don't even notice are there, right?
I agree. But sometimes, like, they don't notice it because they don't, I mean, you're just not aware. And that's why I'm so, like, we talked about the whole well-rounded thing. Like, mm-hmm. even as an actor, if they don't want to become a director, like, just pay more attention to the behind-the-scenes work.
You could be a better actor if you understood how directing works better. You isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, when I've become an actor in certain things, like, I just did a horror film. Like, I can see where the camera's placed. He's about, you know, he's searching for what he needs, and I just take a step to the left because I know for a fact I'm being blocked by this thing. And it's like, you know, you're like, you know what they need. It helps all around to be a little more well-rounded, like, in general. And so, yeah, I don't know. I can't find any specific difficulties, but I just, yeah, like I said, I just like to observe them all, just kind of see how to put them out. But you almost have to just deal with those challenges when they come, because mm-hmm. you can't predict any of them.
No, you just know that they're going to.
You know they're going to.
You don't get thrown by that.
Just be ready. But there's certain things you could do. Like, obviously, you have, like, your contingencies in your budgets and things like that you could possibly run into. You're like, crap, we needed, all of a sudden this parking lot's going to charge us $500 extra more. And, like, you just have to be prepared for things like that you know you can control.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it's just, you know, you never know if the location's all of a sudden going to kick you out or this or that, you know? But, like, permits, you're like, oh, great. Perfect. Like,
whoops.
Yeah, should have got one. Awesome.
Oh, well, next time. So, if you weren't a director, what would you do? I know you're also an editor. I mean, you're basically an artist at large.
Yes.
But I think of you as primarily a director.
Yeah, so, I've thought about this before. And, I mean, like you talked about before, on the side, I create artwork out of broken vinyl, which I love to do. It's like a release for me. If I'm not doing a film or being creative, it's another way for me to express creativity. But if it weren't something, you know, just like that, I would probably actually do, I mean, this sounds really weird, but it's a way to be creative as well. Because I mean, my house is decorated like Halloween all year round, and I love decorating. Like, I think, like, interior design stuff would be so fun for me. Like, to just, like, be given this playground and be like, this is how I want it, like, do that. Or, like, even architecturally designing stuff, you know, like homes or, like theme parks. They're like, hey, we're creating the Harry Potter ride, like, come up with, like, ideas of what this room could look like, you know? Like, that would be fun for me, I think, to do sort of, like, not drafting exactly, because that's a lot more, like, technical, but, yeah, like, something like that.
Well, it's another visual medium, and it's storytelling in a different way.
I guess
way.
It is, yeah. So you're, like, something that you would do that's not that way.
No, but it is. No, that's who, you know, we are who we are. We are the animals that we are. And the truth is, there's a lot of different ways to express that in the world.
Mm-hmm.
There's never just one way to do it.
Yeah. But it is a whole different animal on its own, you know, like, because that could be a 9-to-5 thing. You show up and decorate this home and you're done. Like, so, but that's something I found a lot of interest in. And I also observe a lot on my sets because I find that so interesting. I've actually, obviously with lower budgets and
mm-hmm.
me and Devin Ryan, we'll have to decorate all of our own sets and have to buy all of our own props. And, like, you know what I mean? You're dealing with that, but that's another way to learn so fast, like, just by doing it.
Well, and it's another way to communicate because it tells a story depending on what choices you make.
Exactly.
There.
Yeah.
Well, so, any advice for young people who might want to direct?
My main advice would to be just do not be afraid to go outside of that box, and to also, like, a lot of people are afraid to just ask questions and to just, and to ask for anything in general, because if you don't have the capability to have a camera, I mean, it's a lot more accessible these days, but if you don't have a camera, you don't have an editing system, you want to learn, like, you know, find a friend who has one, like, reach out on Facebook. Like, if you want to do it, don't be afraid to just do it, because just the action of it is just so much more, obviously, I don't know which word I'm searching for, but you can sit there and want to do it and obviously, like, research it and watch movies and be like, oh my gosh, I want to direct. I would do this. I would do that. Do it. You know what I mean? Like, even if it's on your iPhone, they shoot in, like, I guess the new one, shoot 4K, I guess, like, who knows? It's crazy. You can shoot something, start to really express your creativity. People will obviously, if it's there, people are going to notice.
Mm-hmm.
But just don't hold in that creativity. That energy needs to be expressed somehow. And I would say that. And I would also, like, again, like, to younger filmmakers or anyone, like, coming into this industry, just be positive. Keep that positivity. Keep that positive energy. Because as soon as that's gone, people will notice. Yourself will notice. You'll fall really quickly, just emotionally and mentally. So you keep that up, and, you know, things will just progress on their own. And you'll grow a support group around you and people who believe in your stuff, and continue to do that for other people as well. You know, don't expect that and not give it in return, because that's another big thing about, I feel like, as a director, is, like, I will also give in return what I expect people to, you know, respect in my work, because otherwise you're not going to go anywhere.
You know,
but
I'm really glad you brought that up, because I think about this a lot. You know, so much of success is, like, it's not just the technical skill. It's not just the gift. I mean, obviously you've got skills for days and you've got genuine gifts, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of people out there with skills and gifts, but who is it that you want to work with?
Yes. Or they're lacking, I mean, it's skills and gifts, but they're
human
lacking
skills.
Exactly. They're lacking the human skills, the social skills, the things that, like, are what make the world go round in people's minds. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And make them connect and make them relate. And if you don't have that, you can have, like, as much talent in the palm of your hand, but, like, if you're not relating to people and people are not wanting to work with you, where's that going to go? You know what I mean? And that's something I've really taken note of as well, is that, like, once you are a pain to work with, or if, like, you're not, like, a pleasure to work with, people are not going to come back to you. You know what I mean? Unless you give them a huge paycheck and they're like, oh my gosh, crap, I have to work with him again. But oh well, the paycheck's great. And you don't want to be that type of person, like, at all. You know, you want to be that person that they're like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to work with this person again.
I would work with
there's no budget. Great. Exactly.
To.
Exactly. There's no budget. We'll still do it anyways.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you want to do. And I think it's all, but the hard part in, like, about juggling this as well is that when some people are genuinely excited all the time or happy all the time and people love to work with you, some people find that as, like, fake or, like, hey, this person's not themselves. And so you're juggling that as well. Do you know what I mean? It's such a game, but that's why you just, like, you just play it. You do your thing. You do what you love to do, and it'll all work out the way it's supposed to. I love it, but it's so interesting.
So what are you working on right now?
I am actually working on, I just finished editing a film called 8 Bodies that my friend Jeanette McCurdy and I wrote together, and then we directed it together. So this is her directorial debut.
That's so cool.
Because she really wanted to get behind the scenes of stuff. And so it's a film right now that my agents at CAA are shopping into the festivals. We've submitted already, but they're, you know, just talking to them and getting it in, and hopefully we'll be able to get it into some of these bigger festivals that we want to showcase it at, because we have a great cast. I mean, Jeanette's in it, my friend Matt Shively, he's phenomenal. I'm telling you, he's such a great, great talent. And we worked with Nathan Kress too, who was also in iCarly with Jeanette, and so that was our first time reuniting in a film, which was really fun. And it was a short, it was a good way for me to mix my dark side with her comedy, so it's a dark comedy of just, like, this newlywed couple who goes on an adventure. Like, I mean, they're honeymoon, but it's basically an adventure. But they accidentally hit someone with a car, kill somebody.
Oops.
But they continue. I mean, they want to do the right thing. They're going to call the cops, and then they bring the body to the gas station to call the police. But then, because they had no reception, once they get there, they realize, I mean, she's going to call the cops. When the husband's like, wait, our fingerprints are all over this body. We're going to go to jail. And she's like, no, we do the right thing. And then, so they both agree that they're going to dump the body. And then there's another couple who kind of, like, witnesses it, so they have to kill them, and so it's on and on, but every time someone dies, there's a ticker, because it's called 8 Bodies, so it's like 1, and every time someone's like 2, 3, you know, so it's a countdown up to 8, so it's almost fun for the audience, because it's, like, interactive, like, it's like, oh, there's a ticker counting up, 8 has to happen somehow, so it was fun, it was a really fun, like, concept, that was really fun to work on. I also have a feature film called Gloom that I had worked on for a while. I've actually done a short for it. My agents had shopped it all through studios that, like, responded so well, but they wanted a feature script. So now the script's done. My agents are shopping it again, thank goodness. And then I also have a TV series that I created called Scary Tale Ending. So it's like an anthology series that's basically like Twilight Zone, a dark version of Twilight Zone meets a really dark version of like Goosebumps. So it has that like quirky, whimsical feel to it, but it's anthology. And so, yeah, there's some really fun stories. Actually, Awesomeness TV just bought one of my concepts, and they had me produce and direct it, and so that one's called Dollhouse, that they're going to release that in October.
Congratulations!
Thank you! So we can use that as, like, the pilot, sort of, for my agents to shop the series, which would be really exciting.
Colton, you're killing it!
I'm trying! Just try, I swear, like, you think you're doing something, and all of a sudden you're like, great, why do I feel like I'm not doing anything?
Oh man, you're doing everything!
You try, you know what I mean? And then, just continuing to do my record art at the same time,
And you take commissions too, right?
I do, yeah, I take commissions, yeah. I actually have several people that just commissioned artwork recently, so I'm busy working on that, and then hopefully, we're going to do another music video for Devin Ryan soon, once she's done with her crazy, crazy schedule.
We got to get her back from Canada.
Right? And then, Hairspray in Canada too?
No, thank goodness, Hairspray's
okay.
Here.
Okay, because I was going to say that's crazy, but yeah, like, Ryan's, like, music video probably won't happen until, like, the new year, because she's, going to be filming for that long. I'm like, great. But last time we were together, we started talking about concepts, because I love their whole new EP. It's going to be amazing. And
it's so good.
I have some really cool ideas for the new music. So
I can't wait. I
know.
Can't wait.
We'll see.
Well, this is so fun.
I know.
Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all under just at Colton Tran. All just, you know, one word, Colton Tran. Also, my Transylvinyl artwork has a website, which is just transylvinyl.com. As well as, like, the Twitter and the Instagram handles. All my work's on my website and my contact as well.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Little cutie.
So fun. Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you like what you heard here, subscribe to this free podcast and leave a quick rating and review. A moment to click on a star rating really helps, and a minute to write a sentence-long review makes a real difference in the ranking for this podcast. Thank you so much for helping me. Do you want to know more about getting a young actor up and running in Hollywood? Buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. And if you need specific help getting your career or your child's career up and running or to the next level, you can get a one-on-one consultation with me over Skype or in person in Los Angeles. Go to my website, hollywoodparentsguide.com, and click on the consultations page. Thanks, and see you next week.